Okay, welcome back, everyone, to hour number three tonight. And we have a, pardon me, a special program. This is going to be really fun because for those of you who have been with the program for any length of time, certainly remember the magnificent interviews that we got to do with William Mills Tompkins. Bill was just an amazing, amazing fountain of fascinating information. Bill Tompkins, the one and only. Now, Bill passed. We lost him. But he had a very close friend among several very close friends named Dr. Robert Bob Wood, who stepped in and had access to all of Bill's computer hard drive data and other things. And he is carrying on with bringing out books. The first book, Selected by Extraterrestrials by William Mills Tompkins, was a minor classic. And since then, Dr. Bob Wood has brought out Volume 2 and Volume 3. And we are forevermore indebted to him for doing that. And I don't know how many more are coming, but he's already made a magnificent contribution to understanding the mind of Bill Tompkins, a mind which possessed information and knowledge that I think even his close friends, and I would humbly put myself in that group, don't know. I don't think Bill was even warmed up. I think he had a lot more to go. And with that, let me welcome back Frank Chile, who put this together tonight. Hello, my friend.
Good evening, Jeff. Good evening, Bob. It's going to be a fun evening. A lot of material to share.
Yes. Yeah, hi, hello.
Hi, Jeff.
Hello. Hello, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jeff. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we do. And I really want to thank you on behalf of humankind who cares about this material for doing all the work. It's not easy to do what you did. And Volumes 2 and Volumes 3 are really extraordinary. You've just done wonderful work. Volume 3 is just out now. You can find it in Guests. Under Dr. Bob Wood's name, I put the link to Amazon there. You can go and get yourself a copy. And what you're going to read, you're going to read the real story, the real McCoy. Not anybody blowing smoke and being claiming to be an ambassador from the Pleiades come here to warn everybody about the evil government we have or whatever they do. I don't know. It's crazy. So, Bob, tell us about Volume 3. We should talk about Volume 2 also, whatever you want to do.
Let me tell you about Volume 1 and 2. Volume 1 is basically everything that he wrote on his computer up to 1970, which is roughly when he went to TRW. And Volume 2 is everything after TRW, and including plus a few things that from his early past that we missed. Volume 1 had a concentration on his work at Douglas Aircraft Company, a lot of which didn't have anything to do with UFOs. So if I had to recommend reading one book, I would say Volume 3 really covers the scope of his knowledge of and interaction with the Nazis and an alien species.
Now, so, Bob, a question, if I might. That first volume, when he was at Douglas Aircraft, there was a lot going on there. You were there. Were you there at the same time that Bill was, even though you didn't know him necessarily?
He joined in March 1950, and mm-hmm. I joined in May 1950, so we were 2 months apart. And I stayed there for a couple summer, and then I went back to get my PhD. And then when I came back later in 1955, he was still there. Of course, he was there for 11 years. But I never met him, in spite of the fact that I knew about him because of his publicity towards the end of his career.
Now, here's a funny part for all of you out there who don't know this. My father worked as director of public relations for Douglas Aircraft, later to become McDonnell Douglas, and he was there at the same time. So that's pretty crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, it is.
And then, They didn't know each other, neither the three, but they were there. And all my dad said, he being director of public relations, he had access. He was, you know, he knew what was going on, like you did, Bob, and like Bill did. Not to the same degree or not to the same area necessarily, but he always told me one thing about all this, the space program and all that. He said, you know, what you see in the papers, what you see on TV, he said, it's all basically BS. It's managed. It's all managed news. It's not the truth. It's just not. It's a story. It's an agenda. It's carefully groomed. And he was the guy that was doing it. So, he knew. Is that a fair statement, Bob?
Yeah, I think so. The interaction that I didn't have with Bill is a good example because he was in a think tank. And and actually, my boss, Wolfgang Klemperer, had an office that looked over the enclosure where I worked. And this guy was rarely there. And I would chat with my friends, where is our boss going? Mm-hmm. And it turns out, in retrospect, he was running the think tank that Bill was in most of the day.
Oh, funny. Funny. And my dad said one thing, which I think I mentioned to you before. He was married, right? Happily married at the time. I was living there.
Yeah.
And he said, excuse me, I'm going to quote Jesus Christ. I'm just going to, that's because that's what he said. Well, one day he came home and he said, Jesus Christ, those women are beautiful. The secretaries there. He couldn't believe it. They were gorgeous. No, and I say that with all respect to anything that might hopefully abrade someone's sensibilities, but that's what he said because they were absolutely stunning. And Bill has said the same thing. Bob was there. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I remember a lot of pretty girls.
There you go.
I had one myself.
There you go. Oh, you grabbed one.
Yeah, well, later on, I got into an executive area, and so I got my own secretary.
Very good. Well, okay. Tell us about Volume 3. Is that the one we want to talk about first?
Well, I think so.
That's the new
one. As
I
say,
okay.
If I could only read one book, I would recommend Volume 3.
All right.
But basically it covers the whole story. And the way it's set up is it begins kind of chronologically. It begins with the first interview that you had with Bill and me and Michael Sala.
Uh-huh.
And then it skips a little time, and then it goes to an interview that Michael Sala and I had with Bill. And then from there on, it goes chronologically through the interviews that you had with Bill up to, about 6 or 7 months after the first one.
We did a total of, Frank, how many hours did we do, Bill and I, on the program?
54 and a half hours.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a remarkable number of hours to get transcribed. But we did that. We've got them all transcribed. And so it's kind of an easy process to see what was said. It's a little easier to edit, too, than Bill's original stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because Bill spoke pretty accurately, but he didn't write very accurately, so... but basically, he tells the story, the first interview with you. He tells the story of his old venture. You know, he covers the fact that he was made kind of semi-famous with his ships, and their display caused him to get the attention of the Navy, who immediately got him a job, and as soon as he was eligible, they drafted him, and after basic training, he suddenly got invited to the Admiral's office in the middle of the night, and then for the next 3.5 years or so, was able to listen to 29 different spies that the Navy was paying. Or they were naval officers, actually. to tell what was going on in Nazi Germany. And so what was going on in Nazi Germany, of course, was amazing to most people, that they had made a deal with the reptilians, who had these underground bases in Antarctica, and they let the Nazis use them in the late 30s to set up equipment and go into production with...
So we can assure everyone that that is true. And Bill's own words that the reptilians were the ones that were here, and we think they're still here today, and they're the bad guys that are probably running this planet right now or influencing the heck out of it. And they had a full-on underground complex there, and they invited the Germans down there to work and set up manufacturing, so to speak.
Well, the latest word that I'm getting is that they're no longer in charge, but... That's another story completely, not in Volume 3.
Oh, I need to hear this. Maybe we should talk. I'd like to know what the latest is on that at some point. Now, and for you listening, we were talking about secretaries. The angle I didn't mention, and I should have, is that Bill Tompkins, and I think my dad, thought that they weren't normal humans. They were especially gifted. Okay? Let's call them ETs. How's that? Did that get to the point? Okay.
Absolutely, yeah. They were the two or three that Bill had, he was concluded they were Nordic.
Right.
And they were old.
Right. Yep. Been around for a long time. I think my father would have thoroughly agreed with that. He was just awestruck at them, and they were all intelligent, he said. They were very smart. And they're obviously holding back, but even that was amazing to hear from him.
Well, the thing that impressed me about Bill's report was that they seemed to consistently know what the right thing was to do, and they would guide Bill telepathically to take the right action much more often than by chance, in my opinion.
Well, I think you're right. He did. I remember that. Frank, you remember? He would say that.
Sure.
Just kind of.
Sure.
He was trying to puzzle through something, and he was just sort of shown the way to go.
Yes, he would get a flash. He would tell me he'd get a flash, and he'd see everything in complete clarity of what it was that he was to design and what it was that he was to put on paper. Bob, I wanted to say to you, you did a masterful job in compiling this piece of work, and I especially liked what you did, the inclusion of your discussion with Michael Sala and Bill regarding some of the overlays that he was showing you regarding the design of the Solar Warden control room.
I put two of those images on the back cover because I thought they were
remarkable,
so important
designs.
Yeah,
they really
and
are
these
remarkable.
Were, I know they were legitimate images because I saw Bill take them out, and they were view graphs. And so we looked at them on the screen, and on the screen, it was Michael who was taking pictures. So we got them from the screen pictures in Bill's home. And
Bob, you made a comment about that there were 20 overlays, but something occurred, they disappeared?
Well, when Bill died, I was allegedly given everything that he had by his son, Brad, and those were not among them. So
wow.
I don't have the originals. And it would have been very nice to have them, but basically, I'm not sure what happened to some of the material that we were shown. That as Bill thought about it more, he might have concluded that some of it was classified, and he shouldn't have shown us.
Okay, yeah, that makes some sense. It does.
Where do you think it might have ended up, Bob? Any guesses? Safe deposit boxes?
No, I think it might well be buried still in one of the drawers that Dean may have, but he said he gave me everything that had to do with Bill's interest in this subject.
Well,
but
maybe
along the lines of family, I just want to say that Mary is doing fine.
Good.
I talk to her once in a while, but she's not. She's getting older, just like all of us. And but she's still alive and well.
That's Bill's wife, everyone, and if you don't know Mary, who was his best friend. Period.
Yes, yeah. His best friend and his all time girlfriend.
Yep. I don't know if. Go ahead, Frank. Go.
I was just going to say, one of the things that came out in the discussion with you and Michael and Bill was that there were two separate programs, one regarding Solar Warden and one regarding the Nordic Navy for rejuvenation. And the one with Solar Warden was a series of protocols of either pills and or injections that would give somebody a period of 20 years to be youthful and complete whatever work they're going to do with Solar Warden and give the opportunity to come back. The other program where the Navy was working with the Nordic Navy, which were men and women that looked just like us, but more of a benevolent type of affiliation, they were able to take a protocol of pills or injections that would expand their lifespan to 2,500 years, if not longer. I never heard that before until you discussed that with you and Michael.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I never noticed the distinction there, but the 20 and back program has been pretty well described by multiple people. I want to thank you, Frank, for having all the images that you got together over the years that were so helpful.
I would find these images and I would bring them to Bill's attention, and he said, "Frank, you're bringing things forward I haven't seen since the 40s." And he said, "Who's putting that stuff out?" And I said, "Bill, I have no idea. A lot of the stuff was posted anonymously." And he said, "Some of those photographs were images that the operatives would bring in and show to the three captains and to the admiral, Rico Botta." And Bill said, "I never thought I'd ever see them again." And there they were. He said, "Somebody must be leaking this purposely."
When Frank says operatives, he's talking about Americans of German nationality who went over to Germany to spy during the war and then come back here to report. Those are the operatives he's talking about. And Bill was involved with their debriefs.
Yes. And he spoke with him probably, his latest estimate was 1,000 times. That is in 3.5 years or 3.5 years. That he met with him 1,000 times. This is basically almost every day of the week. So
when you go to
a little overestimate, but he met with him a lot of times.
Go to Guests, everyone, if you haven't, and look under Bob Wood and Frank for photos. That'll open up a photo page for you, and you'll see the cover of the book. It's right there, and Amazon has it. It's no problem. And then you'll scroll down, you'll see some other things. And one thing that's, there's a number of very interesting images here, which we should kind of go through if you'd like to, Bob. One of the images didn't come up yet. It's got a little red, a little blue box in the middle. I'll have to get it fixed. But you want to go through those pictures while we have them?
Okay, well, I've got them from memory because I just sent them today. But one of them showed a picture of a UFO and a German airplane in the same
plane. BF-109. There's a picture, and it's you have to scroll to the bottom. It's the second to last picture, and it's a 109 flying right next to one of the German UFOs, discs.
Right, I think. To me, that was an example of the only case that I can remember of seeing a conventional airplane along with a Hanabu. So I thought that's why I selected that one to send. The other that I thought was interesting was the alleged inside view from the flying saucer windows.
That is absolutely fascinating, and that's the third from the bottom picture in photos. And that is purportedly the interior of, is that a Honolulu, or is that
one of
theirs?
It was one of the German craft. It was one of the German craft.
Which one
when
it is.
Bill saw that, he was so amazed. He said, Frank, he said, that photograph was originally shown to us by one of the operatives, and somebody posted it, and I shared it with Bill, and he said, that's exactly what they had shown us of the inside of one of the craft.
See, now, I never got that information. That's very interesting.
Talk about a talented spy. Espionage to get into one of those craft and take a picture? That's mind-boggling. But anyway, if you look at it, if you look at it carefully, think circa 1940 to 1945. Just think that's the time frame you're looking at. And look at the construction. Look carefully. We don't know what that was made of. We don't know what the Bill might have, but we don't know what the was that. Some kind of fabric? What was it? Padded? We don't know. But that is supposed to be the inside of one of the German craft.
Right. And the third photo, remind me what the third one was.
It's the U.S. Naval Sea Cadets emblem and three of them.
I sent that because Bill was so deeply active in the intergalactic activity that it was set up for the kids of the naval officers in Oregon. That's
right where I am right now. Right where I am right now. Seriously, yeah. I'm 20 miles from there at the most.
So,
Bob, there's a few other photos. Go ahead.
Well, I thought that that image is sort of a reminder of his activities in Oregon that were included a strange one where he went with other people to the top of Mount Shasta and ran into
It wasn't Shasta. It was to the west of Medford, and it wasn't all that high like Shasta. It was just one of the hills there, the little low mountains, 3,000-4,000 feet maybe. And they went up to the top, and that story is recorded in the archives. And when they got to the top, they realized that there were some things that were very strange. They passed by two UFOs that were parked, but they weren't sitting on the ground. They were parked and they were above the ground, like 5 feet, 4 feet. And then they went to an enormous hunting lodge for lunch. And the hunting lodge, at one point, when they all were sitting at a long table, and there must have been, I don't know, 30 people, there were two groups, the group from Medford, Oregon, and the group that was already in the hunting lodge, if it was a hunting lodge, which we don't think it was. And the windows on one side suddenly... Well, you tell the story, Frank. What happened during that lunch?
They suddenly became transparent.
Became transparent. And he said that the chairs and tables all became very futuristic looking, like they were acrylic. And the entire floor became transparent. And they could see themselves leaving Earth and going into... to a trip to visit another planet. And he said that the clothing that the people were wearing changed all into like one-piece outfits that you would see in science fiction movies. But the men and women were wearing clothes that were not, you know, typically Earth clothes. And they were shown this other planet and brought back, and then it transformed again. And Bob, you were brilliant enough to make that the closing story of the book, which was just superb.
That's true. thank you.
All right, we're talking about...
There was another photo I put in there early this morning that I couldn't find in the book. I thought I'd put it in. It was in the images for Volume 3, and that was the American flag with a swastika in the middle. But
what's the background
of
that?
It into the book.
What is that? What is the background of that flag?
Well, the background of that was when Bill went to Huntsville, which he did on several occasions, but at least on one of those occasions, he saw this flag flying over the Army base with a swastika. And the reason I didn't put it in is because there was questions about where the swastika was. Was it in the area where the Union Stars are, or was it like it shows there? So I decided, well, I'm not quite sure which way it was, I'd leave it out.
Okay.
It's
but theoretically, that was... Go ahead, Frank.
I just want to say it was his first trip to Huntsville, where he brought his design prototype of the Apollo craft, and he had met Debus and von Braun for the very first time. And he said he was shocked when he saw a flag with a swastika on it over that base.
Yeah,
only
right.
15 stars on it. We might mention that too. And I'm not sure what the 15 stars mean. I have a guess. I don't know how many states, we'll call them states, that Germany had during the war, or provinces, whatever they were called then. I believe they were referred to as states, like we have states, count, whatever.
That's an interesting thought, Jeff. That may have some validity.
Let me find out.
Yeah, so I didn't have enough information to really put it in the book. It's just speculation.
Bob, you haven't seen it yet, but I've shared some photographs with Jeff of new cell phone technology that is transparent, where you could actually hold your hand behind it and see through it. And the reason I brought that forth is in that discussion that Bill had with you and Michael Sala, he discussed designing circuitry with when he was at Northrop Grumman, and they had sub-miniaturization that was so precise and so exact that the circuits became invisible. And I thought, isn't that something? Bill brought that up in that discussion with you and Michael Sala, and now Samsung and Sony are coming out with devices where they're transparent. Apparently, that circuitry has been brought forward to the public now that we'll be able to see it in products that Bill talked about them utilizing back in probably in the early 80s.
Very interesting.
Yeah, that's a very good catch.
Yeah,
when I saw that, I said, I need to share that with Jeff and Bob, because that's a validation of what Bill was talking about, that they had sub-miniaturization that was that fine. And Michael Sala said, well, how small was it? And he said, the circuitry became transparent.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And he also discussed this when he was at TRW. Bob, this is a heck of a story where he's saying one of the TRW engineers had to go up to Seattle, and he's driving up on Route 5, and he got above Sacramento, and he saw a craft coming down, and it's daytime, go back into a wooded area. So this engineer pulls off the Route 5, goes down a dirt road as far as he can go, and stops his car and his window's open, and he hears a voice say, come on board, we have coffee for you. And he couldn't believe what he heard. So he got out of the car, and he starts walking to where the sound of the voice is, and he sees a craft that was about 300 feet in diameter, and there was no landing ramp down, no ladder, anything like that. And he said it was just hovering above the ground, and he walked over to it, and then he said a ramp came down from underneath of it, and he heard again, come on, we have coffee for you. Come on board. And he went on board, and it was members of the Nordic Navy. There was 100 people on board, all in uniform, 70 men and 30 women. And they showed him around the craft. And that was some diversion he had going up to Seattle.
Yeah, that's covered partly in Volume 3. I don't remember the 30 and 100, but...
100 Nordic soldiers, 100 Nordic naval service
people,
so to speak.
They were not from our planet. They were off-planet people, and they were telling this engineer of the work that they were doing with the Navy. So the Solar Warden was working with one group of visitors, and the Nordic Navy was working with another group of Navy personnel in humanitarian purposes, you know, touring the other planets, other star systems. Hmm. Exciting stuff in it, really.
Did you perchance have a page number for that?
Yeah, hold on.
We're talking about Bill Tompkins, The Amazing Story, Volume 3, as edited and brilliantly put together by Dr. Robert Wood, and it's available. And if you ever read a book about ufology, UFOs, ETs, this is the one you want to read. Bill Tompkins was a treasure.
Page 72, Bob. Page 72, inside a Nordic craft. And then it goes into life extension at TRW. And the 30 questions that Michael Salop posed to Bill, and Bill answered them, there are some incredible, incredible answers that he's giving there. I like the one Dr. Sala asked Bill about, could it be that Debus was aware of the anti-gravitational capability that the Germans had, but were steering the U.S. Designers and scientists towards more solid fuel and gaseous propulsion systems. And Bill answered that there were parallel programs going on at the same time. I thought that was a heck of a question by Michael Sala.
Yeah.
Well, there were also parallel UFO building programs going on at the same time. One.
Yes. Yeah.
With what's her name? I can never remember her name.
Help Maria Orsic.
Maria. If you look it up, the reason I get confused, she went by three or four different names because of her nationality and all that, alleged. But Maria Orsic, she had one other woman who was in it with her. There were several, actually. They were building UFOs. She was getting channeled information, allegedly, from out there.
Yep.
And when the SS found out about it, they were mind blown, and they demanded access to the technology to begin to build their own fleet of UFO craft.
Yep.
And you'll say, well, if the Germans had these things, why didn't they use them in the war? Why didn't they go after the bomber formations with them? Because if one of them had been shot down in the wrong area, all that technology would have been out of the bag. They couldn't take the chance. That's the primary reason.
Yeah.
Well, I think the other reason is they ran out of pilots who could run them.
That's that too.
Yeah. There are a couple of other photos that I did send earlier. They're the ones that are the Solar Warden vehicle and the equipment that were actually on the cover of the back cover of the book.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out a way to get them enlarged and sent as JPEGs, but they are presumably the interior of the Solar Warden vehicle as Bill had them.
Well, that you have it there. We have them up. Solar Warden Command Center. Details of Solar Warden equipment. No, we have
right.
them. One photograph, it's up. So they're there. It's on the back cover of the book. And by all means, please consider getting this book. It's that important. It's more than revelatory. It's stunning. Yeah, stunning. Well, I don't know where to go from here because there's so many places to go. I just hope that if the sun comes across anything that would help you and not defer to national security or whatever and be worried about that, this is important that we have access to this. I hope he can come through if there's anything else. And I bet there is.
Well, Bob, didn't you mention that there's other interviews that Bill did with Jeff that you're going to transcribe and come out with book four?
Yeah, the transcriptions are all done. So what I'm doing now is editing those transcriptions when appropriate. And then I'm going to try to do some correlation with volume three and have the same subject information kind of together.
Got it.
Point out that Bill's story is consistent, that it's what he said in 2015 or 16 is the same as what he said in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
He might have said the same kind of thing at least two or three times. So for those skeptics who say, well, you know, your story can't be that consistent, they might be impressed with that authentication. But,
You also asked him about the packets that he delivered, and he mentioned something about upwards of 500 packets to Caltech and MIT and to Princeton. And he happened to ask me one time about what areas of Pennsylvania I was familiar with, and I said, I used to attend metaphysical meetings in Warminster. And he said, Frank, there's a Naval Development Center in Warminster that he brought at least 20 packets out to. And he said, that facility is huge. And I said, Bill, if you had been there back in the 40s, that was all farmland. He said, yes. He said, but they had a huge underground facility. The surface base is like 1,000 acres. But he said the facility much, much more. It was enormous. But he said he went there 20 times delivering packets, and he said that that underground facility is still active.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And I think
they have facilities all over the country. There are facilities, lots of them. And if any of you listening, and some of you are listening, who work in those facilities or are attached to that particular division of this alleged government, we'd like to see sometime if you want to take us on a tour. We'll shut up. We're not going to talk. But we'd like to see validation. I wouldn't say anything. I know that Frank and Bob
Jeff
wouldn't either.
And Bob, somebody sent me a link for a podcast called the Truth Podcast, and there's a Navy whistleblower on it. He was interviewed 6 times, and the sixth time he revealed his name is Mike. And he talks about underground facilities that Bill had spoken about. He said all the military facilities are all linked underground, and he said the military facilities that the public was told are closed are still fully operational underground. And he talks about off-planet meetings where they're going aboard craft that Bill talked about designing. He's going up there and shuttlecraft and having meetings on board these motherships that are enormous. And he's revealing this information, and he said we're getting closer and closer to this being released to the public. And I'm trying to get this guy to come forward, Jeff, and maybe appear on your program and discuss some of these things, because he seems to be talking about things that Bill had shared with us over those 54 and a half hours of interviewing, and he's coming forward and sharing this.
And well, I'd be happy to have him on. He doesn't have to reveal his name, of course, or anything. We're just talking.
Yes.
So, that'd be great. And if any of you are listening out there who are working in those programs and who feel that you have an ability to share some of that information without getting yourself in trouble, just contact me. No problem. We'll take care of it. This
it's
book.
It's time all this comes to light anyway.
Way past. But this book, Volume 3, that Bob has heroically put together and is working on 4, is probably, it's tough to say, maybe the singular book in ufology that is maybe the most important book. It's, in many ways, it is. There are some wonderful books out there, but this one is extremely special. So,
well, thank you for that.
Bill doesn't hedge. You know, when you and Michael were asking him questions, well, he was pretty straightforward, Bob. He didn't hedge into anything. If he didn't know something, he said he didn't know it. But if he had an inkling of where some of that answer could be, he would state it too.
Didn't you feel, Bob, that when he was talking, he was, I don't want to use this trite cliche, but he was still holding things back?
Oh, yeah, he was. He specifically stated that several times he was holding him back. But
yeah.
I think, you know, as he went on over the 2 years or so that you and he were talking, I think he began to reveal more.
I think
towards the end he was ready to tell essentially everything.
I got that feeling that we were at the doorstep, and all he had to do was walk through. And if he were still here, I think we'd still be doing interviews. I do.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know, one of the things that impressed me about his speculation when he was working in the booking, I think he began to reveal more.
I think towards
the end, he was ready to tell essentially everything.
I got that feeling that we were at the doorstep, and all he had to do was walk through. And if he were still here, I think we'd still be doing interviews. I do.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know, one of the things that impressed me about his speculation when he was working in the...
Hey, Bill, you're going to be okay. You got a concussion, but we don't want you to do any more talking. Maybe that was it.
That's possible, yeah. Right.
Just a thought.
So, anyhow, there's a few people who are speculating that he's not dead. In any case, Mary's getting the money from half the book. So that was the deal.
God bless her. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, she was
Bob, I was pleasantly surprised that you showed his badge when he was at West 2007, because he told me that he said everything was color coordinated in regards to security clearance. And I said, Bill, what was your level of security clearance? And he said, mine was the second highest. And you show on that badge that he had a red color designation.
But it's a black and white book. So
it says red. It says red on the badge.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Oh, good point.
Yep. And he said they were all color coordinated, and he said there was a band of color on it, but on the badge you're showing in the book, it says red. So, but has band that been red on that badge?
I don't have that badge physically.
Okay.
I have his basic ID, but not his badge, one that shows that he's in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said that you can't get into certain conferences or briefings unless you had the proper color. And he said the color he had access to any meeting that was held whenever there was a West, 2001, 2007, 2017, he would have complete access. And he would tell Jeff and I and the audience that when he was at these meetings, admirals would come up, put their arm around him, and want a photograph with Bill.
Absolutely. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, back to the flag and the 15 stars on it.
Yeah.
Germany was divided. This is interesting. This would have been Western Germany. How many states was Germany divided into? The Federal Republic, I guess that's what it was called after the war, extends from the Alps in the south to the North and Baltic Seas. As a federal system, the German Federal Republic consists of 16 federal states, whose state governments partly take on their own state duties. So there were 16, but there could easily, you look at the flag, and they might have just considered one not worthy of putting on the flag. Might have been small, might have been just kind of irrelevant, but you've got 15 on that flag. 3, 6, 9,
you broke
12,
that code,
15.
Jeff. You broke that code.
Yeah, very good.
Yep.
Good for you.
I think so. I think it might be. That is interesting. Well, we really miss Bill. I didn't consider those interviews as much as just spending time with a friend. It was just wonderful.
Yeah, yes.
It was terrific. I wonder if that's the flag. If Debus and the others said, okay, we're here. The 15 states of Germany, we're honoring them. The 16, but I think they left one out for reasons of aesthetics. Look at them.
Well, I bet there's a few Germans around who could answer the question.
Might be.
Yeah, you're right, Bob. You're right.
How
but he said every time he went to Huntsville, he always saw that flag there.
And was it indoors or outdoors?
Outdoors.
It was outdoors.
I'll be darn. Well, I found it, so maybe that's it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Look at the images there and the book. By all means, get the book. It's absolutely fascinating. This man, we allegedly lost him at, how old was he?
He was 95.
95, not 94? Okay. I mean, and you listen to the interviews. A 94-year-old man that sharp with that much knowledge and never hesitated. Never.
Never.
He would just answer the questions. Yeah. He would say, if he said, I don't know, he didn't know. He wouldn't play games. And he was right here. Well, it's funny. I ended up here, too. And his friend here was the county commissioner, one of, I believe, five, who lived half a mile from my house, where I am.
Yeah, the grandson of, or not the grandson, but the son-in-law of Barry Goldwater.
Correct.
Rick. He was the county commissioner.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Bill would say that he would disappear for 3 or 4 weeks at a time and then never get into any trouble for it. And I said, Bill, what do you think he was doing? And he said, Frank, he was going off planet. And when he would come back, he'd go and visit Senator Goldwater and give him a briefing of what it was he had experienced.
Well, one of the things that impressed me as being significantly different was his perception of the degree of connectivity we have underground. in the tunnels and the caverns, both through water as well as through high-speed transportation. And I'm confident that most of those high-speed transportation systems are still working.
And Bob, he would always say that the secret organization running everything was the Freemasons. And he said it didn't stop at a 33 degree. He said it went up to 100 degrees. And I've spoken to other people that I've met who've conceded that to me. They said they wouldn't say it publicly on air, but they said, yes, it goes up to 100. And the Masonic Temple in Philadelphia is the mother lodge of the country. It was started by Franklin, Jefferson, Washington, and Hamilton. And it's still a fully working lodge. And it's only open to the public one day a week on Saturday from 1 to 5. And the tour is free of charge. And there's extraordinary murals in there. And one of the tour guides who was taking us around, I happened to ask him, I said, is it true that the genesis of the Freemasons, the origins go back to Atlantis? And he looked at me, and he very quietly said yes.
Here's one for you. If you look at the top of the home page, you'll see a number of photographs taken by someone at the South Pole. Well, the Antarctic, okay? And I want you to look at the... have you seen those pictures, Frank?
At
the
top
of the home page? Yes. Yeah, look at those.
Yeah.
The civilization that was down in the Antarctic was extraordinarily advanced. There are columns and pillars like Greek and Roman temples and things. It's down there. There was a lot. I think that whole continent was moved, and I think that whole continent might be Atlantis. Because it said it's covered with water now. That's what Edgar Casey said. What is ice? Ice is water, isn't it?
With the water, that's right.
And the county commissioner at Jackson County that knew Bill was Rick Holt, and that's the one who lived near me. And I did speak to his son, who was involved with some of that particular luncheon that they went to. And he wouldn't talk to me. He said, I don't want to get into that. I don't want to talk about it. I've got a family. I've got children. I don't want to talk about it.
It was him and his brother, Jeff, that took the signs that Bill Yip said that they were the signposts leading them to the hunting lodge.
That's right. Yeah, but he did not. He was very nice, but he said, no, that was hands off. He was afraid. He didn't want to go there.
Yeah. He said Bill used to take him and his brother fishing, and he said, whatever Bill Tompkins told you is the truth. And he said he was my father's best friend.
Wow.
Yep. No coincidences. I just don't believe in them anymore.
None.
No. Bob, thank you on behalf of the part of planet Earth that still counts for doing that work and working on Volume 4. It's extremely important. You're telling a story through Bill, for Bill, for all of us that would otherwise be lost. So...
Yeah,
keep
that's
it up.
Right.
Keep it up.
You're
going
to inspire me to get working on it.
Okay. All right, Bob. Good. Please do. And thank you for being here, as always.
Well, you're welcome. And if you just had one book you want to read, it'd be Volume 3.
Okay.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you. All right. We'll talk soon, Bob. You take care. Keep at it.
Okay. Thanks.
All righty.
Good luck.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
And Frank? Thank you for doing all the things you've done, so many, over so many years, helping so many people. So I think
you're
getting
very kind.
These, I'm telling the truth, easy. What Bob is sitting on in Volume 4 will be equally as important as Volume 3. So I hope all
that.
Of you who really want the truth will read.